Red Saturn, May 2022. Hello and welcome to the St Albans and District Talking Newspaper, serving St Albans, Harpenden and the surrounding areas. This is the Red Saturn edition for the week ending Saturday, 21st of May, 2022. Now normally it would be Bill producing the programme, but he is taking a well-earned break, so this is Ian co-producing alongside Rob and Steve. This week's music is Rippling Waters by Gothby, a composer familiar to listeners of the primary edition that I usually produce, and we will play the full-length version at the end of the programme. In this week's edition of Red Saturn, amongst other things, we will have the usual news stories, nature notes from Rupert Evershed, and two articles from Hertfordshire Life, followed by the radio listings and the list of television programmes that are audio-described. For those of you that are keen, we'll have the first episode of TNF Soundings Exercise Regime. First, though, the news read by Caroline, Lucy, Caroline and Sarah.
Hello, this is Lucy, and we're going to kick off today with an article about the fight to keep Chiswell green, which is gaining momentum. A grassroots campaign has targeted thousands of homes with leaflets in a bid to prevent the overdevelopment of St Albans Greenbelt. The initiative comes after Calor Homes submitted a planning application to build 391 homes to the south of Chiswell Green Lane, following on a bid to build 330 homes on former polo fields to the north of the road, both prime Greenbelt sites. Meanwhile, other plans have been submitted for 265 homes at the former Butterfly World, 240 at Rose Farm, an additional 176 behind Long Fallow and at Noak Lane, and nearly 2,000 more homes just south of Noak Lane and Lye Lane. Non-political group Keep Chiswell Green has delivered 2,000 leaflets to addresses around the area in a bid to halt the developments. It claims because St Albans Council does not have an up-to-date local plan and is under pressure from the government to meet an unrealistic and outdated house-building target, more schemes could emerge in the years to come. Secretary Jonathan Channing said, "Even one major development in Chiswell Green will change the village from a medium-sized suburb of St Albans to a town in its own right. It'll have to be renamed Chiswell, as there won't be any green left." KCG co-chair Shirani St. Ledger McCarthy added, "I believe that by working with other groups who also want to limit development to what is absolutely necessary, we can change the targets and stop the rampant destruction of the Greenbelt that would result if we do nothing. Some say that we can't change these components of the planning process and that we need to try to exert influence to meld the new developments into our villages in such a way as to minimise the impact on the existing population and environment. But I believe the new developments are not inevitable. In a time when so many people's democratic rights are not respected, we should use our voices to speak up and make a change for the better." A spokesperson for Calor Homes said, "The application made will not only provide 391 homes, but also land for a new two-form entry primary school, large areas of public open space and an accessible children's play area. The development will also deliver 10% biodiversity net gain through the creation of new habitats for existing wildlife in the area. To shape the planning application and plans for the area, Calor conducted a comprehensive consultation with the local community to ensure the scheme meets the wants and needs of those living and working in the local area." And you can find out more information on Keep Chiswell Green by going to keepchiswellgreen.org.
Men of Fields ready for fourth momentous march. 20 cricketing dads from St Albans are preparing to embark on their fourth epic walk for charity, and hope it will be their biggest fundraiser yet. Garden Fields Cricket Club, also known as Men of Fields, is a collection of close-knit dads with children at Garden Fields School in Townsend Drive in St Albans. Every 2 or 3 years they undertake a large charitable walk, and this June will be taking part in the fourth in a series which has already raised more than £80,000 to date. The 2022 event is the famous Ulster Way Walk of 75 miles or 120 kilometres, which will be dedicated to the British Red Cross Ukraine Crisis Appeal and a charity close to their hearts and local to the walk, the Northern Ireland Hospice Appeal. The group has a strong track record of fundraising, with previous walks having taken part on the Isle of Wight, in Devon, and the famous Ridgeway Path across southern England. And previous beneficiaries have included Rennie Grove Hospice Care and the Hospice of St Francis. After their last heroic effort in 2019, the pandemic made it impossible to attempt a charity walk, but now the Men of Fields are making up for lost time by supporting two charities for 2022. Spokesperson Trevor Meriden said, "We could not undertake an event this year without supporting the plight of the people in Ukraine in these desperate times. And as with previous years, we also wanted to continue our efforts to support hospices local to our walking route. Hospices have cared for those close to us and provided amazing support to friends and family." The group has asked Hearts Advertiser readers to give generously to this cause, as they hope to raise £10,000 for each charity.
Hello, I'm Caroline. Neighbours condemn industrial estate plans. Residents have called for action to prevent a major industrial development in the heart of Harpenden. Plans by Coal Pensions Properties Limited to redevelop Southdown Industrial Estate include round-the-clock HGV movements, substantial warehousing and a service yard, despite the site abutting residential properties. A decision on the proposals was delayed due to the local council elections, but is now due for consideration by the Planning Referrals Committee on June the 6th. Julie Smith, who lives in nearby Meadow Walk, said, "This will be a horrendous development for Harpenden and in particular Southdown, the industrial estate and the residents living all around the area. Small industrial units such as exist now and operate in normal working hours Monday to Friday are welcome, but an outdoor builder's merchant with long opening hours, HGVs and forklift trucks, plus an acoustic barrier due to the excessive noise that will be generated is totally inappropriate. The current application has conditions which allow outdoor activity from HGVs unloading and loading to take place between 7 a.m. and 9 p.m. Monday to Friday and slightly less at the weekends. The industrial unit is small and already crammed with cars and not suitable for HGV traffic. The noise and disruption to residents in the local area, which is already busy with traffic and has two schools close by, will be dreadful. And for those few of us who back onto this area, we will never be able to enjoy our gardens again." Neighbour Ken Muir said, "This development is set to bring a large number of HGV trucks and articulated vehicles through the already busy heart of Southdown, including at times when children are walking or cycling to and from school. The implications for road safety in the area are too horrible to contemplate." Fiona Gaskill, councillor for Harpenden West, said, "All three Harpenden West councillors are already working together to listen to the significant concerns of many residents about this development. Any planning decision will be made in accordance with planning legislation, and we will do our best to ensure their concerns are fully heard during this process."
Hello, this is Caroline. A St Albans grandfather died when the classic Bugatti he was driving was involved in a crash with an ambulance. The family of Simon Diffie, aged 57, played tribute to a larger-than-life character and generous spirit. Simon was involved in the crash on the A6 Barton Road between Luton and Bedford on Saturday, May the 14th. Emergency services, including Bedfordshire Police, were called to the scene at around 6:30 p.m, but the Bugatti driver died at the scene. A family statement reads, "We are so sorry to have to announce that our beloved Simon, everyone's friend in historic racing paddocks, the ever-friendly, larger-than-life character who knew everyone and was known by everyone, tragically died on Saturday evening in a road traffic collision, driving the much-loved little vintage Brissetta Bugatti that he campaigned so well. Simon was a very talented racer and a consistent winner in a variety of cars. He lavished meticulous care and preparation on the Bugatti, his Lotus Formula Juniors, the Connaught that he raised for a friend, a self-built Humbug and Austin 7. Then he drove them to the maximum, whether in a VSCC trial or in the highest profile races at Goodwood and in Europe. But more than that, he was a one-off, a hugely generous-spirited man who would help out a fellow competitor, a friend or a stranger without a second thought. This was not only in motorsport, but also in business, for his firm Merry Printers was the go-to supplier when teams, restoration firms, race promoters, clubs and private owners in the car world needed anything printed. Without effort, Simon could not help being an entertainer, generating outrageous fun wherever he went. With his warm generosity and his skill and sportsmanship behind the wheel, small wonder that he was one of the best known and best loved people in the historic motorsport. Suddenly all that's come to an abrupt halt, leaving only a gaping hole on the track and in the paddock, and a legion of friends with a burden of regret and sadness. A much loved husband, son, father, brother-in-law, and very proud grandfather, who cannot be replaced and will be forever in our hearts. The ambulance involved in the crash was travelling on blue lights at the time. A Bedfordshire police spokesman said, with the support of specially trained officers, Simon's family have issued a tribute and asked for privacy at this difficult time.
Cost of living crisis not in the Queen's speech. Daisy Cooper, MP, talks about Parliament, this week's Queen's speech and some of the traditions of the event. Parliament resumed this week, after the local elections, and the big event was the Queen's speech. Although normally read by the Queen, it's actually written by the government and sets out its priorities and the new laws it wants to bring forward. This year, of course, the speech was delivered by Prince Charles, with Her Majesty too unwell to attend. There were the usual rituals. The door to the House of Commons was slammed shut, the basements were searched, and MPs formed a deliberately disorderly and noisy gaggle to walk to the House of Lords chamber, all performative acts, supposedly designed to indicate elected MPs having a healthy disrespect for and independence from an unelected monarchy. Some people like the tradition, others think it's bizarre. In truth, some MPs love it, some hate it. All agree that an MP should take part at least once. In that vein, I attended in December 2019, after my election and before the pandemic, jostling for the slightest space in an increasingly sweaty knot of MPs. I was more reminded of a bad Thames Link journey than a royal anything. Then the Attorney General apologised for stepping on my toe, twice. Some things really are best seen on TV. This year's speech highlighted some of the 38 laws which the government intends to push through in the coming year. But the one thing everyone was talking about was not what was in the speech. Measures to tackle the cost of living crisis. Within minutes of the speech concluding, there were calls for an emergency budget. Opposition MPs, myself included, lined up to give our reactions to the national media and, of course, to Twitter. By the time the Prime Minister made his own presentation to the Parliament 3 hours later, he was clearly feeling the pressure. The PM suggested, in a characteristically off-the-cuff comment, that he would announce new support measures in the days to come. As often happens with this PM, his claim was then quickly rejected by his own government ministers. Opposition calls for action intensified as a result. MPs will debate all the various contents of the Queen's speech for 5 days. The one thing on everyone's mind is the rising cost of living.
Last Saturday, there was a chance to make a bird feeder and bug hotel during a special environmental event at a St Albans church. St Paul's Church in Fleetville also offered the opportunity to learn about eco-friendly flower arranging and stock up the garden with bargains from the church's plant sale. The church, at the corner of Hatfield and Blandford Roads, is offering a series of activities under the title of God's Green House, with the invitation to come and see what the church is doing to protect the environment. Both events ran from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m, and visitors could also check out the mini beasts and birds in the church gardens and tour the sustainable features around the church. Reverend Peter Crumpler, Associate Minister, said, "We wanted to give local people a chance to see the steps we've taken to care for the environment."
Beating the bounds. An ancient ceremony with its roots in the Middle Ages is set to be repeated in St Albans this Sunday. The traditional custom of beating the bounds dates back 700 years to 1327 and involves a leisurely walk along the city's 4.5-mile boundary. During the event, wands made out of willow will be used to beat the ground at significant locations. In the past, the ceremony was used for people to pass on the knowledge of where the city's boundaries lay and to exert their rights as citizens. This year's procession will be led by outgoing St Albans Mayor, Councillor Edgar Hill. Residents and visitors are all invited to attend the walk, which starts at 2 p.m. at the Pudding Stone in front of Kingsbury Mill in St Michael's Village in St Albans. The walk will take around 2 hours and end at Verulamium Museum with tea and biscuits.
Mr Motorsports, St Albans lawyer with F1 flair. He's defended a serial killer, an international motorsports company, and represented celebrities including Kate Winslet, Liz Hurley, Shirley Bassey, Jeremy Clarkson, and Hugh Grant. But locally, he's best known for his 16-year stint with St Albans Chamber of Commerce. Peter Goodman is now stepping down from the Chamber Board after a tenure which included 3 stints as President and Vice President, and chose this occasion to take a look back on what he describes as an extraordinary and quite bizarre career. Now working as a consultant for St Albans solicitors SA Law, his blog describes him as an experienced corporate and commercial lawyer with a niche specialism in sports and entertainment. But this barely scratches the surface. Working as a criminal lawyer between 1968 and 1986 saw Peter defending the young St Albans poisoner Graham Young, who laced the food and drinks of his family and friends with thallium and antimony. He recalled, "I was on one of my visits to see him in Brixton Prison, and he suddenly offered me a sweet. I looked at him, he looked at me, and said, 'Well, Peter, I wouldn't poison my lawyer, would I?' I thought, 'Well, you poisoned your father, mother, aunt, and closest colleagues at work. Why wouldn't you poison your lawyer?' However, I was a macho man in my early 20s, so I ate the sweet and stayed close to a phone for the next few days." Peter was also involved in prosecuting a gang of major armed robbers caught in Hemel and being involved in prosecuting and defending major international drug smuggling cases, including the 20-plus tons of cannabis in which Howard Mr. Nice Marks was a defendant. He then worked as an international motorsports lawyer, which saw him negotiating and drafting contracts with 6 F1 champions, including Prost, Senna and Mansell, and defending Williams Racing in the manslaughter trial arising from the death of Ayrton Senna in Italy. The Senna trial was a whole compilation of weird experiences, including taking statements in Bologna with the Italian police. They delayed our flight back to London until we were finished. The drive back was crazy. Damon Hill was the driver of my car. The other was driven by an Italian police driver who clearly thought it was a race. The trial started in February 1997 and ran until December 1997. A day here, 2 days there, long gaps. It was a lot of days away. Nearly 100 international flights and flying around Europe to take statements from various people, including Michael Schumacher and Gerhard Berger. His other anecdotes include the occasion in 1998 when he was effectively arrested by Italian immigration police in Milan, alongside driver David Coulthard and his father. This was just before the Monza GP, the race immediately after the Spa GP in which David crashed into Michael Schumacher driving for Ferrari. No coincidence there. Apart from that, it was endless glamour. Flying into Nice Airport in the cockpit of a private jet and then the helicopter to Monaco GP. Staying in billionaires' houses in the USA. Private motor museums, 5-star hotels. At different times, I advised 6 other F1 teams, including McLaren, Ferrari and Lotus, and acted for quite a few successful drivers, including Mika Hakkinen, David Coulthard, Alan McNeish and Paul de Resta. After leaving the high-octane world of motorsports, Peter found himself working in sports and celebrity management with various A-list celebs, was manager and lawyer to Richard Burns, England's only ever winner of the World Rally Championship, and enjoyed success with US motorsports drivers, including 6 victories in the Indianapolis 500. But none of this has overshadowed his work with St Albans Chamber of Commerce, which saw him hosting the likes of Terry Waite at the annual St George's Day lunch. When I arrived in St Albans aged 17, I'd lived in 6 countries on 3 continents. The district has now been my home for the last 5 decades, and it's good to be able to give something back. I've always enjoyed my work locally. I was a commercial lawyer and drafting contracts for local business people. My international motorsports persona did exactly the same work, but the size of the contracts was massively higher and the surroundings often more glamorous. Most of the people I worked with in motorsports were business people, just like those in St Albans, easy to be with and a pleasure to work with. There were some who were none of those things, but that applied locally as well. And there are 2 photos of Peter. The first is of him posing next to a very impressive racing car, which looks very Formula One in style. It's Dario Franchetti in his winning car for the BorgWarner Trophy in the Indy 500. And then a photo of a very happy looking Peter in the sunshine at the NASCAR race in North Carolina.
Over 30 young musicians, aged between 4 and 17, performed a special concert in aid of Ukrainian relief efforts, which raised more than £3,000 for Ukraine. The event, which took place before an audience of more than 100 people in St Helen's Church, Wheathamstead, on Sunday, was the brainchild of Claire Partington, who runs C-sharp music tuition in the village. Reverend Richard Banham, who introduced the concert, observed the difference between the situations here in the UK and the war-torn Eastern European nation. Here, where we can enjoy the peace and serenity of our beautiful 13th century church, contrasting the devastation that we see every day on the news in so many towns and cities in Ukraine. The audience included Ukrainians who've only just arrived, together with their Wheathamstead host families, who met with VIP guest concertmaster Askana Germanchuk, who's only recently arrived in the UK herself, and who works at the Tchaikovsky National Music Academy in Kyiv. Opening the concert, 2 of the younger musicians, 5-year-old Ralph Denny and 8-year-old Christian Girotto, invited the audience to stand for their piano duet of the Ukrainian national anthem, which they had memorised in just a few weeks, before a programme of piano and string pieces were performed. Claire Partington said, "At a time when, in some quarters, young people get bad press for being consumed by their electronic devices and being detached from the real world, it was so pleasing to see them donating their time and their talents to this good cause. It takes many hours to reach the standard of playing required for their first public performance." One of the performers, Elaine, said, "I think I'm doing this fundraising concert for the Ukrainians because I have this friend at school. She's Ukrainian. She has relatives back in Ukraine. I think it must be really stressful to be worried about them every day and to hope that they're okay. So I just want to show my support." Special guest councillor Annie Brewster, vice chairman of Hertfordshire County Council, congratulated the young musicians for their commitment to their music and the pleasure they give everyone in producing such accomplished performances for such an important cause. "I shall never forget this concert. I have rarely been so moved as to hear Askana Germanchuk play the mesmerising piano version of Melody by the Ukrainian composer Myra Schlank-Shorskift. To think Askana has a husband and a 27-year-old son still in Ukraine is simply heartbreaking. Askana told me she was overwhelmed by the support she felt from the UK, and no more so than to hear Ralph and Christian play the Ukrainian national anthem. I believe the newly arrived Ukrainian families who joined us felt some comfort from what they heard too. Enormous congratulations to Claire, her colleague Joanne Drown for this string section, St Helens and the wider team for creating such a truly wonderful event, and huge thanks to everyone who's contributing via the Just Giving fundraising page to the Ukrainian Humanitarian Appeal Disasters Emergency Committee. The fundraising total has already smashed £3,000 thanks to the generosity of local people."
Shop renting out shelves to small independents. A mother and daughter team are offering small online businesses a venue to showcase their products for a real-life audience. The Small Biz Collection, located in the High Street at the front of the Village Arcade, rents out shelf space to independent brands looking to reach a wider audience. The venture has already proved a sell-out success, with more than 20 brands currently stocked in the shop and a waiting list of excited entrepreneurs looking to join. Products include jewellery, candles, clothing, children's clothes and decor, trinkets, faux flowers, handbags, artworks and cards. Emma Bustamente, who owns Casitas in Hollywell Hill, said that she recognised a common thread from her experience in stocking and making products and running creative workshops for small enterprises. To stock any of these small businesses, we were really having to squeeze our margins, and to be perfectly honest, in this post-COVID climate, that's not something I've been able to do. This way, we're able to offer small businesses the chance to retail directly to their customer with low risk and minimum investment financially and in terms of staffing. From a different perspective, it's been really interesting for me to explore other ways to retail. And this time, no website, just good old-fashioned shop sales with a little bit of Instagram. Her daughter Gracie launched her online crystal business, Rock Goddess Crystals, during lockdown 2 years ago. I'm really lucky to be stocked in Casitas. That's a definite perk of having a mum with a shop. Having a small online business myself, I truly believe the Small Biz Collection is an amazing opportunity for businesses like mine who want to sell in a bricks and mortar premises to reach out to new audience without the crazy costs and without having to spend your own time manning the shop. I'm sure all the small businesses we're working with now will find these factors very appealing too. It's so amazing for lots of small businesses to rally together and support each other under one roof. Emma added, I think at a time where we try and be mindful of where we shop, slow retailing from small independent businesses and supporting the local economy is something that local people will really get behind.
Our next article is about a group of young and very talented chamber musicians who are going to play a charity concert. Last Night of the Proms lovers, look no further for your classical music fix. Tickets to that iconic music event can be hard to come by, but Rennie Grove is offering you an opportunity to see one of the top billed acts play in aid of local hospice care next month. Sheku Kane Mason, accompanied by his brother Braemar and their friend Plinio Fernandez, all housemates, will play a charity concert in Chelsea's Cadogan Hall on Wednesday the 1st of June at 7:30 p.m. The special concert, Sublime Strings, is the young men's way of thanking their landlord, Stephen Spiro, Chair of Trustees at Rennie Grove Hospice Care, for lockdown support when concerts were cancelled and theatres closed because of COVID-19. The three internationally renowned chamber musicians will showcase how cello, violin and guitar can complement each other across a range of classical and folk pieces in a hand-picked programme that includes both classical and folk pieces, including Sheku's own arrangement of Bloch's Poignant Prayer. Stephen says, My wife and I heard Sheku perform when he was the soloist in Elgar's cello concerto at the 2019 Proms. We'd seen the whole family in a concert at Hatfield House previously and were enthralled by their talent. Just after the Promenade concert, our letting agent rang to say he'd found us the perfect tenants for our flat. I couldn't believe it. It was Sheku, Braemar and Plinio. It's been a privilege getting to know them over the years, and I'm thrilled they're doing this charity concert to raise much-needed funds for families facing life-limiting illness. Sheku first shot to fame in 2016, winning the BBC's Young Musician competition. 2 years later, he performed at the Duke and Duchess of Sussex's wedding at Westminster Abbey, and he performs internationally with the world's greatest orchestras and is bicentenary postgraduate at the Royal Academy of Music. This September, Sheku will perform at the Last Night of the Proms. This is an exciting chance to see him perform alongside his brother, Braemar, a versatile Royal Academy-trained violinist, and their friend Plinio Fernandez, a young Brazilian guitarist of international renown.
Britain's oldest pub, Ye Old Fighting Cocks in St Albans, has become the venue for an episode of a popular BBC football podcast. The pub standing today was built in the 11th century, but the foundations date back to 793, making it 1,222 years old. Recently, it hosted the BBC Five Alive's weekly podcast, Jill Scott's Coffee Club, in which the athletes chat to fellow female footballers and offer a glimpse into women's game. Jill Scott's Coffee Club is hosted by England and Manchester City's midfielder, Jill Scott, MBE. Scott has been recording the podcast alongside her playing career, spending this season on loan at Aston Villa. The episode hosted at Ye Old Fighting Cocks will be available from May the 18th online or via the BBC Sounds smartphone application. In the episode, Scott and BBC presenter Ben Haynes are joined by England captain and Arsenal defender Leah Williamson prior to the UEFA's Women's Euro tournament that takes place in England this summer. The landlord of Ye Old Fighting Cocks, Martin Robinson, commented, "Being a huge football fan myself, it was a real honour to have Jill and Leah in Ye Old Fighting Cocks recording the latest version of Jill's podcast and chatting to Leah about the upcoming Women's Euros. We will be cheering on Leah and the England team at the Euros this summer and showing the matches on screen inside the pub too." The pub only reopened in April following a takeover in which the venue's former manager became its new landlord. The new owner has made a variety of changes since the takeover in order to make the pub a success. This has included installing replica signs emblazoned with gold leaf. Another change to the pub is the brand new barbecue kitchen in the establishment's revamped garden. This change features an extended outdoor dining area ready for the summer months ahead. Mr. Robinson added, "When the sun comes out, Ye Old Fighting Cocks is the place to be, and we always have a lot of hungry people to cater for who've been out and about enjoying what St. Albans City and Verulam Park have to offer in the summer. My management partner and our head chef, Ian Bulsh, wanted to increase our capacity for catering for them, as our inside kitchen can be so busy. Now they don't have to wait for their food, they can see and smell it being cooked before their eyes. We have some great options on the barbecue menu, including chicken thighs in harissa spices, jumbo tiger prawns, spiced lamb sausages and grilled halloumi. And this is in addition to the normal classic pub menu. We're delighted the barbecue kitchen is ready in time for the good weather. We also have chilled music playing and will also be offering table service outside so customers can relax and soak up the sun while waiting for their food. We're just hoping for a long, hot summer now."
A couple of arts items to share with you now, and there'll be an exclusive audience with a legendary comedy producer and writer of shows such as Blackadder, Spitting Image, QI and Not the 9 o'clock News in Harpenden next week. Big Screen Live presents A Night Out with John Lloyd at the Eric Morecambe Centre on Thursday, May the 26th at 8 p.m. John Lloyd is the man behind some of the biggest TV and radio comedies of all time. As producer, writer and director, he's been making the world laugh for 45 years. Now, multi-BAFTA award-winning John Lloyd, CBE, is coming to Harpenden for an exclusive evening of memories, anecdotes and behind-the-scenes secrets from a career working with all the biggest names in comedy. This rare event promises to be hugely entertaining and will include clips from Lloyd's best-known work, including the many commercials he's directed, such as the Bayek You're Gorgeous Boddington's ad and Barclaycard with Rowan Atkinson. Tickets cost £25 and you can book at theemc.co.uk. And St Albans-based Trestle Theatre Company has received funding from the Paul Hamlin Foundation. The award from the fifth round of the Teacher Development Fund will see the launch of a new two-year project entitled Create, Speak, Thrive, Bringing Words to Life. The fund aims to enable teachers and school leaders to develop their skills, knowledge and experience in order to embed learning through arts in the primary curriculum. Over the course of the project, Trestle will work in partnership with 8 schools across Luton and Stevenage, the Royal Opera House Bridge and the University of Hertfordshire. Helen Barnett, creative director of Trestle Theatre Company, said, "I'm delighted to be able to expand on the success of the pilot project last year, which highlighted a very real need for support in relation to speech, language and communication within primary schools." And for more on Trestle, you can visit www.trestle.org.uk.
A disco-inspired production of A Midsummer's Night Dream will kick off this year's festival at the Roman Theatre of Verulamium on Tuesday the 24th of May. OVO's musical remix of William Shakespeare's evergreen romantic comedy is co-directed by artistic director Adam Nichols and associate director Matt Strachan. Sporting a glamorously attired cast, OVO's Dream is set to transport audiences to the glittering, hustling, hip-swivelling age of the 1970s disco boom. Starring some of the Roman Theatre and Malting Theatre's most popular actors, including Emma Wright as Titania, Guido Garcia Luchez as Puck, Lyle Fulton as Lysander, and Emilia Harold as Hermia, this dream will have audiences singing along to the blissful disco soundtrack. Adam Nichols said, "We decided to set A Midsummer's Night Dream in the 1970s for two reasons, social change and music. Disco was one of the most influential cultural and musical movements of the 1970s, and our production gives us the opportunity to explore and question traditional expectations of gender and sexuality through the music and through the lens of the women's movement and liberation politics of the 1970s. When the play goes into the forest and the lovers run away, there's a series of fantastical events that lead us to think of hedonism and the glamour and glitz associated with the height of disco. We've created two contrasting worlds, the traditional working men's club of Britain and the glamour of New York's Studio 54. In the beige 1970s, in a down-at-heel working men's club in northern England, barman Nick Bottom dreams of a musical career. Meanwhile, Mia, Helen, Dean and Andy are snogging, drinking, fighting and arguing, much to the disapproval of their parents, until a mystical figure arrives and they're all transported to a dream world where an enchanted palace offers games of music, dreams and fantasy. But will Nick find his voice? And will the lovers find a partner before the music stops? This hugely entertaining production features music played by a live band under the stars. It follows OVO's long line of critically acclaimed and award-winning musical Shakespeare productions, including the 1980s rockfest Merry Wives of Windsor and As You Like It, set in the Summer of Love. On Choosing the Music, co-director Matt Zedd will be drawing on the Bee Gees' Saturnite Fever classics such as Staying Alive and You Should Be Dancing, because we've embedded elements of the film into the fabric of our concept. We'll also have Candy Staton's 1976 chart topper Young Hearts Rung Free as a way of questioning how the play traditionally treats its women. And we've had great fun researching the world of the 1970s disco, so there'll be lots more music for the audience to enjoy and remember. A Midsummer's Night Dream can be seen from the 24th of May to the 11th of June. For tickets, visit www.ovo.org.uk. The festival itself runs until August the 21st. We're all set for our longest ever residency at the Roman Theatre, added Adam Nichols. We'll be there for 3 months with a fabulous programme of entertainment that offers something for everyone, whether they're regular visitors or first-timers to our beautiful venue.
And now, let's take a look at the letters sent to the editor by some local people. No Mo May. Just when the project of No Mo May is taking off around the country, and even the Times newspaper ran a leader promoting it, our highways department takes a backward step. Down our lane these past 3 weeks, the verges were full of flowers, all producing essentials for a variety of insects. Then, whilst I was laid up with COVID, Mower Man arrived and cut down a whole length of wildflowers, celandines, white and blue nettles and masses of forget-me-nots. Why? Did someone complain they were untidy? They were forget-me-nots, for heaven's sake. These spring flowers are so important for the life of our insects, which in turn play a vital role, not just in the lives of other creatures. Birds, bees, butterflies, they all depend on the flowers and the leaves for food, and in turn other creatures depend on them. Bees of all kinds have had a particularly hard time during the past year, and this may show up in your local fruit production. Butterflies are not just pretty things to put on fabrics, but their caterpillars provide vital food for nestlings. No point in feeding peanuts and seeds at this time of year because baby birds can't swallow them. Other insects also suffer. And whilst you might not care about flies and beetles, many of them play important roles in holding our environment together. Because native spring flowers only flower once and set seed before dying back, it's vital that they have the chance to get through to June. It's illegal and punishable with a fine for removing wildflowers, so perhaps the County Council should be fined for their violence. I've been in contact with various county departments for several years, pointing out the importance of protecting natural habitats, but it would seem people would prefer to live in boring parks with imported plants and lawns scalped to oblivion. For the past 40 years, our natural life has been under huge pressure, and in May, areas have almost disappeared. Does anyone care? From Maggie Cartmell of West Common, Harpenden.
A letter from Andrew Love. It's all about local hospital pressures. I would like the opportunity to respond to Nathan Masterson's and Helen Brown's letters from the last 2 weeks' editions. Firstly, I can assure Mr. Masterson that new hospital campaigners are no actors and work tirelessly in trying to hold our hospital trust accountable for their hospital estate redevelopment plans, which we feel discriminate against those living outside of West Watford. Mr. Masterson suggests campaigners use private correspondence with the Trust, and I'm sure the Trust would love to keep our correspondence discreet and away from the public domain. The stakeholder meetings that Ms. Brown refers to in her letter are very poorly attended by members of the public, many under 50 people, and it's very important that our local newspaper, by publishing campaigners' and concerned residents' letters, is keeping its readers informed about the Trust's plans for the future location of our new A&D hospital. Many local residents are unaware that St Albans City and Hemel Hempstead hospitals lost their A&E departments in 1993 and 2009, and the population of these areas have grown considerably since. To add to this, West Harts has a projected growth of 50,000 homes in the next 10 to 15 years. New hospital campaigners argue that fairer access to our A&E hospital is just as important as deliverability, and that a new, clear and more accessible site would probably improve deliverability. Regarding Helen Brown's letter in last week's edition, with Helen Brown leaving West Harts Hospital Trust in June, she failed to mention in her latest letter that the Trust promised in both their March and April blueprint newsletters that a fresh eyes approach would look to see if the board's decision to exclude a new site option in October 2020 is still valid. The problem with the Trust's supposed fresh eyes approach is that the same old faces have been involved in this rushed review and are recommending to the board that the decision to rule out a new site for West Harts A&E Hospital is still valid. The incoming CEO, Deputy CEO and any replacement for the acute redevelopment director's role will not arrive until after the board meeting on May the 31st, where the Trust's final decision will be made on whether a new site option should now be included in the Trust's outline business case. This board meeting and approval of the Trust's preferred options has been timed nicely to allow those leaving the Trust to leave a legacy that could deny the West Harts population a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to enjoy the benefits of a centrally located A&E hospital in an environment fit to be called a hospital health campus. It's very clear that the Trust are under pressure from the public and government to justify the staggering £1.1 billion cost for building a monstrous three-tower, high-rise hospital on the current hard-to-get-to and cramped Vicarage Road site. Bizarrely, Ms. Brown recently claimed that building on the current Vicarage Road car park would represent a new hospital on a new site. I've said it before and I'll say it again, that many of those making the decisions for the Trust will have moved on before the consequences of their decisions are fully realised. It's vitally important that the board meeting at the end of May is postponed until the new CEO and Deputy CEO are on board. Those making such important decisions for us all need to be held accountable for redevelopment plans that will need to serve the entire West Harts population for the next 60 years plus.
MP's views on trans and women's rights. The issue of women's rights in the context of transgender rights has been rumbling beneath and above the surface for a few years now. From the start, I should say that if any adult feels uncomfortable about their current biological sex and wishes to change their gender, they should be able to do so. This is a huge decision for anyone, and society should be tolerant and accepting of those choices. However, tolerance and acceptance of that decision should not mean that women's safe spaces and women's sport has to change as a result. the attempts by some trans activists to secure full access for transgender women to women's sport must be resisted. Keir Starmer, the leader of the opposition and the man auditioning to be the next Prime Minister, has been unable to explain what a woman is and unable to say whether biological males should be allowed to compete in female sporting events. To the credit of the Prime Minister, he has entered the fray and has said what most feel is eminently sensible, that biological males should not be competing in female sporting events, as for some sports, the basic physiological differences between biological men and women are stark. One of the most concerning aspects of this agenda is the targeting of very young girls, under 16, who are asking to begin to undergo the very invasive chemical and physical treatments in teenage years. Indeed, at one of the schools in this constituency, two parents told me of their daughter's attempts to start the transition process with the knowledge of her school, but without the school telling the parents. This is surely wrong. There are a growing number of cases of people wishing that they had waited to have gender reassignment surgery as they since changed their minds. Another area of huge concern is allowing men who identify as women to go into previously female-only spaces. One example of this has been allowing men to go into female prisons to serve their sentences. The majority of people, regardless of political affiliation, understand that we need to apply common sense while respecting people's rights to live as they feel comfortable. If we do not, women's spaces will be less safe and women's sport will never be truly fair for all participants again.
Taekwondo. A schoolgirl from St Albans has become one of the youngest people in Europe to achieve a black belt in Taekwondo. Sienna Galea is just 8 years old, but came through her grading with flying colours to pick up the ultimate prize. The Aboyne Lodge school pupil has been taking part in the sport since she was just three, training with the St Albans-based PALIC TKD club. Black is the 10th and final belt in the sport, and the grading was made up of a theory exam including Korean terminology, patterns, varying different types of sparring and board breaking, pad work, line work and fitness. Mother Michelle said, "Sienna trained all the way through lockdown, both independently and via Zoom, so she didn't miss any future grading opportunities. This takes a lot of dedication and commitment. It's a family affair too, as her four-year-old brother is about to start, while her dad also picked up his black belt at the same grading." Her school said, "This is a fantastic achievement and something to be celebrated. She's been added to the Wall of Fame where we celebrate the achievements of pupils both past and present."
And this is another letter found on the letters page from Ian Freestone of Seymour Road, entitled Spicer Street Toilets. I fully agree with Simon Thwaite's comments on May the 12th on the closure of Spicer Street's toilets. I too was under the impression that this was under consideration, but sadly within a few weeks of the proposal surfacing in your newspaper, the toilets were closed. Clearly the decision had been made by the ruling group on the council behind closed doors, so much for the much-trumpeted practice of seeking local opinion. Sadly, this does not surprise me. I lived in southwest London until recently and shopped regularly in Richmond, another liberal stronghold, where there are no public toilets left at all. Instead, there is apparently an under-publicised arrangement with retail businesses who supposedly make their facilities available to members of the public, irrespective of whether they are paying customers. Not only is this problematic out of shopping hours, but the facilities are limited and you have to ask. Is the closure of public loos a national policy of the Liberal Democrats?
Thanks again to those four readers, Lucy, Sarah and two Carolines, Caroline E and Caroline F. The Heart Advertiser this week only has four names of those who have died recently, so I'll give you those four now. Delia Ann Ensor, aged 79. Douglas John Neville, aged 90. Margaret, known as Peggy Pixton, aged 87. And Malcolm Thomas West, aged 71. Robin has passed me some details of two pieces of equipment which listeners have kindly donated, as they no longer use them, and you might be interested in either of them. One I've mentioned before, and that's the Optelec Clearview Monitor, which is designed to assist anyone with low vision. It enables you to enjoy reading, writing, to view photographs or do crafts and lots of other things in black and white or in colour. It's a simple operation, apparently, which magnifies text or objects with adjustable brightness and contrast. And the monitor can be tilted to prevent glare and light reflections, and the viewing angle and height are also adjustable. Now, the size of the screen is 14.5 inches in width and 12 inches high. The base of the unit is 16.5 inches wide and 26 inches deep. And that base can be extended to the left or right by 6 inches, and it can be moved forward by 8 inches. So it's a reasonably flexible unit. Now, the Optelec Clearview is quite heavy, and it's not easily moved from place to place, and it would need to be collected from St Albans. But if you'd like to have it, but you can't arrange to collect it from St Albans, I'm sure we can find a way to get it to you. It'll take two strong-armed men to carry it from one place to the other, but we'll do it if you're interested. The second item is a small device that helps sight-impaired people to enjoy reading, writing or viewing photographs and various other things. This device consists of a pair of glasses or goggles that you wear, as well as a small mouse, similar to the one that you use with a computer. And it's very easy, apparently, to use this device. The glasses or goggles and the mouse are plugged into a 13-amp power socket. There are two separate plugs, so each is separately plugged into the socket. Once you've plugged in the devices, the lenses on the glasses light up. And as you move the mouse across the item that you want to read, the text appears in the lenses, which, of course, is much closer to your eyes. Now, this item can be delivered to you. So if you're interested in either of these two items, please contact Robin Cristoforou on 01727 866 725. That's Robin on 01727 866 725 for the Optelec Clearview Monitor or for the pair of glasses and the mouse that transfers the text onto those glasses. 01727 866 725.
And now this month's Nature Notes. Here's Rupert Evershed.
Some spring highlights. There is a lot of nature in spring. At least it feels that way as fresh green leaves unfurl to cover all those wintry views and provide a luxuriant backdrop to everything. From the heights and depths of all this new foliage, birdsong emanates, at its best right now, from dawn until dusk. There is so much to take in, to see and to be reacquainted with, that it's difficult to know quite where to start. Of course, the first place to start is perhaps very early in the morning, about an hour before first light. At the first hint of light in the east, a chorus of birdsong builds across the landscape, be it suburban gardens or country copses. To witness it is one of life's great miracles, made even more so by the fact that we, for the most part, are fast asleep for this daily performance. Lying in bed and listening is no substitute for actually getting out to listen. The chances are the nearest bird to your bedroom window will begin to sound annoyingly repetitive as your body fights you back to sleep. But outside, standing in the first light of dawn, breathing the cool air, sound comes to the fore and you are bathed in a soundscape of natural music. The 19th century naturalist and writer Henry Thoreau captured the wonderfully renewing experience of being in nature at dawn when he wrote, "Morning brings back the heroic ages." Of course, you may not be an early riser, but that does not mean there's not still plenty to see. Driving around the lanes surrounding St Albans, you will undoubtedly have tantalising glimpses of blue carpets stretching across the woodland floors. I sometimes think that these glimpses of bluebells are better than actually walking among them. Somehow, up close, a little of their magic fades, but viewed from afar between the dark woody trunks, they make a woodland glow with an ethereal beauty. Out walking recently, nature has also literally bumped into me in the form of St Mark's flies that, true to their name, have suddenly emerged en masse following the Saints' Day on the 25th of April. They are not the kind of nature that most people get excited about, and while they are completely harmless, they are large enough to require you to keep your mouth closed lest you ingest an unwelcome morsel of chitin. However, to me, they are a welcome sight and a sign of the fullness of spring. Their appearance means the air is once again filling with the life-giving volume of insect life that is the basis for so much of the natural world. Some we love, like the pollinating bees and butterflies, and most we are not so keen on, viewing them as mild irritants to terrifying pests. But their presence, and importantly quantity, means that so much of what we love about summer is on the doorstep. Swifts screaming around the rooftops, swallows over the fields, and house martins busy under the eaves. This year, the swifts of St Albans must also be wary that they don't become food themselves, as the city is playing host to some new residents, peregrine falcons. One of the few birds able to match the swift in aerial speed and dexterity, there will perhaps be an extra tension in the air for this year's swifts, as the peregrines have, for the first time ever, started nesting on the Abbey Tower. After many years of anticipation, St Albans Abbey has finally joined the host of cathedrals up and down the country that can offer views of peregrines going about their daily business on its high spires, gargoyles and turrets. Some of this business is necessarily grisly, as prey is brought back to be devoured or hopefully in time fed to hungry chicks in the nest. If you like a challenge, take a pair of binoculars and see if you can spot them. You might even get to identify what their latest meal is. Just recently, a bright green pile of feathers indicated that St Albans now has one less ring-necked parakeet. Of course, you may settle for something less gory, but whatever you do, take a moment to enjoy spring's rich variety.
Thank you, Rupert. Now, the first of two articles from Hertfordshire Life magazine. Chris Paramore reads the Richard Young article about a Hitchin-based charity taking medical supplies to Ukraine.
Race to save lives. Taking urgently needed medical supplies directly to a regional hospital in Ukraine, a Hitchin charity is helping save lives in the war-torn country. They're driving in a camper van full of medical supplies in the war zone. They've been sleeping on the wards in the hospital, and when there's an air raid siren, they're going pitch black, down into the bunkers with the doctors and nurses. This is what's facing two charity workers, repeatedly racing 180 kilometres into Ukraine to deliver desperately needed medical supplies to courageous medical teams, facing a huge volume of injured, sick and traumatised people fleeing bombed-out towns and villages in the country. I'm speaking to Joe Wearne, UK director of Hitchin-based Humanitas. She's on her own in a small office in the heart of the town. The rest of the five-strong team are on the Ukrainian border, packing medical supplies and assisting medical director Dr. Ramiz Mamini and charity co-founder Harpenden Sarah Wade, who have been making the runs in a 4x4 and camper van to an undisclosed regional hospital in the south of the country, where supplies are also being sent on by train to Kyiv and other cities in need. Hundreds of injured civilians are being taken to the hospitals every day, Joe says, victims of the relentless aerial bombardment by Russian forces on civilian targets. The charity's work, running homes for orphaned and abandoned children in Romania, where Dr. Mamini is based, meant the team was able to react quickly to the crisis. We were there anyway in a neighbouring country, so we thought we'd just have to do something, says Joe. Rather than the expense of transporting supplies from the UK, Dr. Mamini is able to buy medical supplies in bulk in Romania. The charity has a shopping list directly from the hospital of 176 different medicines and medical items. The town we are travelling to is now home to 150,000 displaced people who have been forced to leave their bombed towns and cities, explains Sarah from the Ukrainian border just before leaving for another delivery. The population of the town has doubled and they're under pressure every day from the constant sound of air raid sirens. The town is preparing for fighting to reach them, but they're also a centre for the distribution of aid to other towns and cities. Humanitas, set up 21 years ago to give some of the world's most vulnerable children access to education, healthcare and a home, has also operated crisis missions, working with refugees in Greece fleeing civil war in Syria, and in the Balakula camp in Bangladesh for the persecuted Rohingya, but it's never been into a war zone before. How did Sarah, 40, feel crossing into literally unknown territory? Our first mission into Ukraine was the most difficult, as we didn't know what to expect. We didn't know the condition of the roads, or what it would be like trying to get through the checkpoints. Now we have a better knowledge of what we need to do, and the best roads to travel on, but everything's changing so quickly, and each journey we take involves more checkpoints and more military presence. The pair have bulletproof vests, walkie-talkies, and are tracked by a professional security team. Joe says the team has not seen any other aid agencies in Ukraine, and most of the donated supplies are building up in warehouses on the border and are not making it into the country. There are warehouses on the Ukraine border where charities are putting stuff for hospitals to collect, but most of the supplies are not what the hospitals need. It's just too dangerous for the hospitals to come out. We're being told exactly what supplies are needed and taking them there. Sarah says the team has been absolutely overwhelmed by the response we've received to our Ukraine appeal, and we wouldn't be able to do what we're doing if it wasn't for the generosity of people living here. But there's so much more to do, she adds. Those arriving from the devastation elsewhere have nothing but the carrier bags and rucksacks they arrived with, and are living in schools, churches and community centres, where conditions are utterly desperate. Despite the selfless humanitarian efforts of people living in the city, the people, mostly women, the elderly and children, do not have bedding, cooking equipment, warm clothing or enough food. We are determined to return with these supplies on our next mission. To help the terrorised people of Ukraine through the work of Humanitas, go to humanitascharity.org.
As always, here's John Cushing with the radio listings.
Now for a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, starting with Saturday, May 21st. The drama on Radio 4 at 3 o'clock is Cocktail Sticks. Alan Bennett narrates an adaptation of his own autobiographical play, reflecting on his early life with both affection and sadness, while Alex Jennings plays Bennett's younger self. On Radio 4 Extra at 4, there's an adaptation of Agatha Christie's mystery novel featuring Hercule Poirot, Cards on the Table. Followed at 5:30 on Radio 4 Extra by Great Lives, which assesses the legacy of Hollywood actor, dancer and director Gene Kelly. And staying with Radio 4 Extra on Saturday at 6 o'clock, you can hear the first part of a reimagining of Bram Stoker's horror classic Dracula, narrated by various characters with different takes on the story. Then back to Radio 4 at 8 p.m. for A Brief History of Progress, in which American satirist Joe Quenin asks whether progress has come to a halt. Beginning with the end of the Neanderthals, he charts the ascent of man and tackles major areas of concern around progress and nature, money and war. Sunday, May 22nd, 10 a.m, Radio 4 Extra, The Duchess of Kent is the castaway in an archive edition of Desert Island Discs from 1989, while at 11 o'clock on Radio 4, a new edition of the programme and Paralympian swimmer Ellie Simmons is the castaway. It's drama on Radio 4 at 3 o'clock with a dramatisation of Mircea Rodoreda's 1962 novel In Diamond Square, written in exile from Franco's dictatorship. In 1930s Barcelona, a pretty naive shop girl, Natalia, meets a charming, forceful stranger, Quime, at a fiesta. They later marry and have two children, but Quime proves an unpredictable husband. During the Spanish Republic and Civil War, Natalia experiences the conflict from a city in turmoil as she fights for her and her children's survival. On Radio 3 at 5:30, this week's edition of Words and Music is inspired by the Tudor era, a time of turbulence with the War of Roses, the seismic break with Rome under Henry VIII, and the bloody era of Protestant executions under Mary I. And on Radio 4 Extra at 6:30 on Sunday, you can hear a dramatisation from 1974 of Daphne du Maurier's short story, The Apple Tree. On to programmes then, and a broadcast at the same time every day, Monday to Friday. So same radio station, same time, all week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. At 9:45 on Radio 4, and repeated at 12:30, the Book of the Week continues the reading of Empire of Pain by Patrick Radden Keefe. Radio 3 at 12 noon, Composer of the Week, concludes a month-long focus on Ralph Vaughan Williams, 1872 to 1958. Radio 4 at 1:45 each day, you can hear a new series of Metamorphosis, How Insects Transformed Our World. On Monday, it all starts with Dazzling Disguise, a look at butterflies. Radio 4 Extra at 2:15 every day, all week, has the final five parts of Thackeray's novel Vanity Fair. While on Radio 3 at 10:45 each night, the second series of Signs of Life, the actor, comedian, author and musician Adrian Edmondson, now 65, considers moments of personal and career highs and lows. While if you prefer, back on Radio 4 at 10:45, Book at Bedtime, which continues Mira Sayal's reading of Love Marriage by Monica Ali. On to the programmes then to listen to throughout each day for the rest of the week, starting with Monday, May 23rd. Start the week on Radio 4 at 9 a.m. has the title Learning from Apes, Fish and Wasps. Adam Rutherford explores how other species can help us understand our own. 2:15, still on Radio 4, the drama Jason's Mates. Peter Strickland's satire of corruption in local politics explores the events of a mayoral election in the style of a 1970s children's programme. The incumbent mayor of the prestigious and picturesque town of Ramonsley has siphoned off public money to benefit his friends and family, while the local hospital and schools are left to fall into ruin. At 3 o'clock on Monday, Radio 4 Extra, there's a dramatisation of The Day of the Scorpion, the second in Paul Scott's Raj Quartet, about the last days of the British Raj in India. The third and fourth in the series can be heard at the same time on Radio 4 Extra at 3 o'clock on Tuesday and Wednesday. Back to Monday, Round Britain Quiz at 3 o'clock on Radio 4. While at 6:30, still on Radio 4, another favourite panel show, Just a Minute, returns with the second in a new series hosted by Sue Perkins, and panellists including, of course, Giles Brandeth and Paul Merton. Tuesday, May 24th, starting with Life Scientific at 9 a.m. on Radio 4, repeated at 9:30 p.m, presented as usual by Jim Al-Khalili. There's more scientific interest at 11 a.m. on Radio 4, The Doolittle Machine, which investigates how the latest advances in AI mean it may now be possible to build a piece of technology to converse with animals. But what would this machine look like, how would it operate, and what could be learned from it? 8:40 p.m. on Radio 4, Peter White presents In Touch, the programme of news and views for people who are blind or partially sighted. While on Radio 3 at 10 p.m. in Free Thinking, there's the first of three Tudor-themed programmes. The programme looks at the enduring appeal of Tudor history and the role that historical fiction plays in shaping our view of the past. Wednesday, May 25th, 9:30 a.m. on Radio 4, or repeated at 8:45 p.m. in the evening, Michael Mosley continues his series Just One Thing. This week he discovers how a simple cup of coffee can improve a person's mood, boost a workout, and even help to burn calories. The Radio 4 drama at 2:15, The Disappearance of Mr. Chan. When Hong Kong writer Mr. Chan fails to arrive at Heathrow Airport, his daughter Poppy embarks on a mission to find him. Radio 4 Extra at 2:30, The Naughty Pictures Committee, is a 2012 programme marking the centenary of the British Board of Film Classification. While Choral Evensong on Radio 3 at 4 o'clock comes from St Martin's in the Fields in London on the eve of the Ascension. While at the same time on Radio 4, 4 o'clock, in the series Thinking Aloud, Wealth, Plutocratic London and Dynastic Wealth goes on a tour of London, a city with more resident billionaires than New York, Hong Kong or Moscow, and have the fabulously rich remade London in their own image. On to Thursday, May 26th, starting on BBC World Service at 10:05 in the morning with The Forum. Bridget Kendall and guests recount the story of the discovery and development of insulin and how diabetes has transformed from a fatal condition to a manageable one. 11:30 a.m. on Radio 4, The Dancer and Her Shoemaker is a Radio Times choice. Francesca Haywood is a principal dancer for the Royal Ballet. Bob Martin crafts her pointe shoes. This programme takes you behind the curtain to peep into the world of ballet and asks dancer and shoemaker where it all started for them. Radio 4 at 3 o'clock in Ramblings, Happy Valley. Claire Balding heads uphill in the second of two back-to-back hikes in the Mourns. She resumes at Happy Valley, about 30 minutes inland from the coast of Down. And at 4:30, still on Radio 4, BBC Inside Science examines the latest scientific research to make the news and explores how science is evolving to affect lives. So to Friday, May 27th, and just after midday on Radio 4, Archive on 4, Over the Top. Kit Green hosts the party in the archives, examining and celebrating extravagance in all of its forms. In Gardener's Question Time on Radio 4 at 3, the panel at the Royal Horticultural Society's Chelsea Flower Show, answering questions sent in by listeners. Sounds Natural on Radio 4 Extra at 6:30 is a 1976 edition in which Derek Jones invited comedian, actor and singer Harry Secombe to discuss his life of wildlife photography and travel. The news quiz on Radio 4 at 6:30 comes from Hay on Wye Literary Festival. At 8:30 on The World Service, Crowd Science takes a look at why metals and minerals show up in some places and not others, when they could just as easily have been spread about evenly. And finally, we round off the week at 10 o'clock on Radio 3 with the addition of The Verb celebrating both the Queen's Platinum Jubilee and the BBC's centenary, with a special programme recorded in the Royal Library at Windsor Castle. Ian McMillan explores rare gems from the collection, and Poet Laureate Simon Armitage performs a new work. That's it for another week. May I wish you a peaceful, safe and enjoyable one of radio listening.
And to follow the radio listings, suggestions for audio-described television programmes, courtesy of the Otley and District Talking Newspaper.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Voice of audio-described TV programmes for the week Saturday the 21st of May to Friday the 27th of May 2022. I hope you'll find them helpful. Starting with Saturday the 21st, a new series of Eat Well for Less is starting on BBC Two at 8:35 a.m, in which a Glasgow couple try to reduce food waste. On ITV at 11:35, we have part 7 of Ainsley's Good Mood Food, in which Ainsley Harriet tries to show us how to add dairy to dishes. Staying on ITV, at 1:25 we have Grand Slam Years, when Gabriel Clark looks back at England's Grand Slam campaign of 2016 and interviews key figures. On BBC Two at 6:30 there's Dad's Army, the wartime comedy show about the Home Guard. This week, Private Godfrey asks to leave the platoon. At 9:20 on ITV, there is the 1% Club. Lee Mack gives 100 contestants the chance to win big money prizes by solving a succession of mind-bending logic problems. Finally, for Saturday, there's a choice of three films. On BBC One at 10:20, Crazy Rich Asians, a romantic comedy. On ITV at 10:40, Taken, an action drama with Liam Neeson. And on Channel 4 at 11:15, Jason Bourne, an action thriller. On Sunday the 22nd of May, there's Homes Under the Hammer on BBC One at 11:15, followed by Bargain Hunt, also on One, at 12:15. On ITV at 1:05, there's Orkney, Britain's Green Islands, with Julia Bradbury, how the islands are working towards a greener future. The Hairy Bikers continue their Asian adventure on BBC Two at 2 o'clock when they visit Bangkok, the world's street food capital. At 6:40 on BBC Two, there's Saving Lives at Sea, in which a crew of RNLI volunteers is called out to a shipwreck off the Cornish coast. At 8 o'clock on ITV, we have the final episode of Grace, the police procedural starring John Sim, when a body is dredged up from the bed of the English Channel. There's a choice of three programmes at 9 o'clock. BBC One is showing the penultimate episode of Gentleman Jack, a Sally Wainwright drama about the life of Anne Lister of Shibden Hall near Halifax. While on BBC Two, Idris Elba's Fight School continues, when Idris's recruits are put through their paces by the British Army's elite boxing team. At the same time, on Channel 4, a new series of Hunted is starting, in which a new batch of contestants attempt to elude an elite team of hunters for 23 days. And now for a look at programmes on at the same time each weekday. The following are all on BBC One. Homes Under the Hammer at 11:15, Doctors at 1:45 but not on Friday, and Escape to the Country at 3 o'clock, also not on Friday. Dickinson's Real Deal is at 2 o'clock on ITV every day. On BBC One on Monday to Wednesday only, a new series of Five Bedrooms starts. This is an Australian comedy drama in which five friends at very different stages of their lives decide to pool their funds and buy a house together. On BBC Two at 6:30 every day, Animal Park from Longleat Safari Park continues. At 7 o'clock on BBC Four on Monday to Thursday, Michael Portillo continues to travel through the south of England in his series Great British Railway Journeys. And just a reminder that all the soaps, that's Home and Away, Neighbours, Hollyoaks, EastEnders, Emmerdale and Coronation Street, are also audio described. Now looking at programmes on Monday the 23rd of May. Food Unwrapped Gets Baking is on Channel 4 at 8 o'clock, discovering the surprising truth about bicarbonate of soda. At 9 p.m. there's a choice of three programmes. On Channel 4 there is the second episode of Hunted, following on from Sunday night, whereas on ITV there is a new series of Long Lost Family, Born Without Trace, in which Davina McCall and Nikki Campbell help people who were abandoned as babies to find the secrets of their life. At the same time, a new series of Silent Witness, the crime drama following a team of forensic pathologists, starts on BBC One. At 10 o'clock on BBC Three, Conversations with Friends, the adaptation of Sally Rooney's first novel about two young women who become involved with an older couple in Dublin's literary scene, continues. Further episodes are on at different times throughout the week, which I'll get to later. At 10:40 on BBC One, there is The Airport, Back in the Skies. Jeremy Spake is back at Heathrow, discovering what it takes to keep Britain flying. And now for Tuesday, the 24th of May. At 3:30 on BBC Two, there is Murder, Mystery and My Family, in which real historical murder cases which sent men and women to the gallows are re-examined in the light of today's forensic techniques. At 8 o'clock on BBC One, Nick Knowles is in Bristol with DIY SOS The Big Build, enlisting the help of volunteers and local tradespeople to reinvigorate an outdoor adventure playground for the community. Also at 8 o'clock, but on Channel 4, a new series of Bake Off the Professionals starts, looking for the best patisserie team in Britain. At 9 o'clock, you could follow up from yesterday's viewing by tuning to BBC Two for the second episode of Silent Witness, or ITV for more of Long Lost Family with Davina McCall. Alternatively, at 9 on BBC Two, Lucy Worsley has a new historical series, The Witch Hunts, in which she looks at a time 400 years ago when thousands of people, mostly women, were hunted down, tortured and killed in witch hunts. Also at 9, but on Channel 4, 24 Hours in A&E looks back at some memorable staff and patient stories filmed at hospitals in South London. Conversations with Friends is again at 10 o'clock on BBC Three. At 10:40 on BBC One, we have Gentleman Jack Changed My Life, a documentary following women who reassess their sexuality after watching the period drama series. At 10:45 on ITV, there is The Yorkshire Ripper, The Secret Murders, episode 2 of a documentary series exploring more than 20 unsolved murders linked to Peter Sutcliffe, The Yorkshire Ripper. On Channel 4 at 11 o'clock, we have The Man Who Shot Tutankhamun, in which Margaret Mountford visits Egypt's Valley of the Kings to unearth the story of Harry Burton, whose photos of the unearthing of the tomb were printed in newspapers around the world. Moving on to Wednesday, the 25th of May, at 7 o'clock on BBC Two, there is Nadia's Time to Eat, when Nadia Hussein gives us ideas for quick and delicious meals to make at home. On BBC One at 8 o'clock is The Repair Shop, when members of the public bring old and dilapidated items to the repair shop in the hope that they can be given a new lease of life. This is followed at 9 o'clock on BBC One by The Sewing Bee, a sewing competition similar in style to the Great British Bake Off. This week is Children's Week and the competitors are asked to make a sailor suit for a toddler. Also at 9, you could tune to ITV for episode 3 of Long Lost Family, or to BBC Two for DNA Family Secrets, in which Stacey Dooley helps people unlock the mysteries hidden in their DNA. There are 3 episodes of Conversations with Friends tonight on BBC Three at 10:50, 11:20 and 11:50. Continuing on to Thursday the 26th of May, at 8 p.m. on ITV, Anita Rani helps 2 couples struggling with the cost of living in Secret Spenders Beat the Price Rises. She visits 2 couples who are worried about how the bills are mounting up. This is followed on ITV at 8:30 by the Prince's Trust Awards, which celebrates the achievements of young people who have overcome barriers to change their lives and make a positive impact on their communities. At 8 o'clock on BBC One, there is Eat Well for Less, in which 2 presenters take over a family's kitchen for a week and show them how to change their eating habits for the better and at the same time to save money. This is followed on BBC One at 9 p.m. by a new series of Who Do You Think You Are?, a genealogy series in which celebrities trace their family history. This week, the broadcaster and comedian Sue Perkins is in the spotlight. At 9 o'clock on BBC Two, there is an episode of The Art That Made Us, entitled Brilliant Voices, which explores how the generation of artists who recorded the shocks of global war gave way to an explosion of new voices after the 1960s. As well as painting, the programme includes readings from plays and poetry. A new comedy series starts on Channel 4 at 10 p.m, Big Boys is about 2 boys from very different ends of the masculinity spectrum who become best mates at university. Episode 2 is straight after at 10:30. A further episode of DNA Family Secrets with Stacey Dooley is on BBC Two at 11:15. And finally, to Friday the 27th of May, it's comedy night on BBC One, starting with Here We Go at 8:30, chaotic comedy with Alison Steadman and Catherine Parkinson. The Jessops navigate life's everyday challenges, from changing jobs to kidnapping dogs. Later on BBC One at 9:30 is The Other One, a comedy about 2 sisters who only discovered that one another existed after their dad dropped dead. They have nothing in common apart from both being called Catherine. Also on BBC One, this time at 10:40, is Love Life, a comedy following the life of Darby Carter as she searches for love. The next episode follows at 11:10. On ITV at 9 p.m. is It'll Be All Right on the Night, in which David Walliams unwraps another collection of bloopers and blunders featuring a galaxy of small screen stars. If you're a horror fan, The Terror, Infamy is on at BBC Two at 9 p.m, set in wartime America, about a vengeful spirit who preys on Japanese Americans. Further episodes of Conversations with Friends are on BBC Three at 9 p.m, 9:30 and 10 p.m. And there's a choice of film to end the week with. ITV is showing Fast and Furious 2, an action thriller in which a disgraced cop is given the chance to redeem himself by going undercover. Alternatively, you might like Fantastic Four on Channel 4 at 12:10 a.m., a fantasy action adventure in which a group of young scientists work together to build a machine capable of travelling to another dimension. That's all for this week. I do hope you found something of interest in my selection. Goodbye.
DNF Soundings.
The second article from the Hertfordshire Life magazine is entitled City of Angels and Devils. Hilary Greatorex reads Rachel Block's article about St Albans.
There's an endless list of fascinating facts about this beautiful place, but it's also haunting and the perfect place for intrigue. So says Rachel Block about St Albans, the backdrop to all four of her psychological thrillers. A best-selling novelist, she reveals she long harboured a dream of a career as an author before finally taking the plunge. I was an English teacher, and I'm convinced all English teachers want to write a book, she laughs. I had a few goes at it, but I was so busy with work I didn't get very far. When I was on maternity leave with my son, I took the opportunity to write while he was sleeping. I was writing in snatches, so it was slow going, and it took 2 or 3 years to write my first novel. Rachel, who lives near St Albans with her husband and 2 young children, decided to invest in a creative writing course, which she says proved instrumental in her eventual success as a full-time writer. It was an evening course for 2 hours, 1 night a week, and it really helped. It taught me how to edit and consider the book as a commercial piece of writing rather than something I had written for myself. Rachel's first novel, Under the Ice, was published in 2018. It took about a year to find an agent and then a few months to get a book deal, she explains. I sent a sample of my book to 3 agents and all of them asked for the full manuscript, which was very exciting. Agents have different ideas and make different suggestions for changes, but Eve White, the agent I went with, was on exactly the same page as me and didn't want to change anything. The reason her crime novels, Under the Ice, The Scorched Earth, Into the Fire and hot off the press release, The Fall, are all set in St Albans is because it's the perfect place to set murders and hide crimes, she says. The stunning city and Roman history make it such an interesting landscape for dark deeds. My first novel is set near the lake, the second in Ayot St Lawrence and St Albans, and the third near the Roman Theatre. The fourth novel is set in the cathedral and the mental health hospitals in St Albans that closed at the end of the last century. The changing treatment of women is a central theme in The Fall. Spoiler alert, the fall of the title is one from the cathedral's tower, particularly surrounding the fictional mental health hospital Hill Barnes, an amalgamation of the former St Albans cell barns and Hill End hospitals. One of the most distressing aspects of researching the novel was reading many diary entries of patients of mental health hospitals over the last century. Less than 100 years ago, women could be sent to these hospitals for being pregnant out of wedlock or for disagreeing with their husbands. As women's rights have developed, so has the way medicine has treated women. The protagonist in all 4 stories is Detective Chief Inspector Martin Jansen, a no-nonsense Dutch family man. My husband is half Dutch and we spent a lot of time in Holland, Rachel says. I like the idea of a matter-of-fact Dutch outsider cutting through the St Albans niceties to investigate crimes. I tend to split the narrative between Jansen and the main characters because I like the contrasting viewpoints on the same story. When it comes to getting the words on the page, discipline is the key. I write about 2,000 words a day while my children are at school, and I really have to stick to it to make sure I meet the submission deadline. I aim to write 80,000 words for my novels, and for every 20,000 words I look back to see if anything needs chopping out. There are always parts I write that I don't like, but I have to push through it and keep going because it's a job and there's a deadline. I have looked back and sliced 30,000 words when I only had 40,000 words. Sometimes you just need to rethink things. She says she's not quite a pantser, writing by the seat of her pants, but she's not much of a plotter either. I know where I'm going with a story, and I know what happens at the end. I have a feel for the main characters in terms of their flaws and vulnerable aspects, but other than that, I really struggle to plan. When I'm writing, that's when the ideas spark. With critics' positive reactions to her work overwhelming at times, she is already 40,000 words into her next book, not this time set in St Albans. It will be a standalone story set on a cruise liner. I'm taking a break from Martin for a change of scene, and this story is told from one person's perspective in the first person, which feels like a real treat.
Now, slip into your best leotard. Here's episode one of TNF Soundings Exercise Regime.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello everyone, this is 10 Today, a 10-minute set of exercises to do at home to help keep yourself active. Before we get to today's presenter, a couple of housekeeping points to note. The 10 Today project is funded by the Big Lottery and Sport England, and when you're doing the exercises, it's important that you don't push yourself too far, and by taking part, you agree to 10 Today's terms and conditions. You can read these terms and conditions at tnflink.uk/10T, and the 10T is the digit 1, the digit 0, and the letter T. And please remember that you agree to take part at your own risk. Today's exercises are brought to you by Liz, and here she is.
Hello everyone, and welcome to 10 Today, Series 2, Session Number 1. These are short 10-minute physical activity routines which will get you moving and stretching. They're great for your health, including boosting your mood, and very importantly, they are designed to support your everyday movements, your functional fitness, your flexibility, balance, and mobility, such as when you have to reach up, turn, bend down, and so on. These simple routines will help you with that. Just take them at your own pace. There are plenty of options. If an exercise feels too much, then just take it easy and have a break. All the exercises can be done either standing up or sitting down, so just do whatever feels good for you today. When lifting your arms or knees, only go as far as is comfortable. If you have any problems with your knees or hips, take care not to twist them during the movements. It can also help to pull in your tummy when you're bending your back. And just breathe normally throughout these activities. We want you all to do these activities safely. You are responsible for monitoring how you're feeling throughout the sessions. If you feel any discomfort or pain, for example, if you feel unwell or dizzy, or experience palpitations, then please stop and seek medical advice. If you're remaining seated, it would be ideal if you can use a hard chair, preferably one without arms, such as a dining chair that you can sit upright in, with a straight back and with your feet flat on the floor. If you're standing, just keep your feet hip width apart, relax your shoulders and take a good strong stance. And you might want to have a sturdy chair nearby to hold on to sometimes for balance. So we're just going to start with a warm-up. You're just going to quickly tap or pat different parts of your body. So briefly tap along each arm, one at a time in different places. Your upper arm, your forearm, and your wrist. Do the same on both arms. Then pat the top of both legs, just quickly tapping up and down your legs in various places towards your knees for a few seconds. You should be nicely warmed up now and ready to move. So we're going to start with supporting the sky. This one works the upper body, so just face forwards and keep your back nice and straight. If you're sitting, remember to keep both feet flat on the floor. Now raise both arms straight up in the air, pushing up towards the sky and with your palms facing upwards. Then breathe both arms down together, turning your palms downwards and keep pushing them down towards the floor. And again, raise both arms straight up, extending them towards the ceiling, palms facing up and then coming down, with palms facing down and pushing towards the floor. Do this a few more times now. Try to get your arms as straight as you can. You can reach higher if you are able to, and you can really push down, but always make sure you feel comfortable. There are lots of benefits to this one. It's good for your arms and shoulders, also your back and chest, as well as your wrists. Next, it's knee to core. This movement's great for improving your balance. If you're standing, you can hold on to a sturdy chair for balance. So, in the usual starting position, with your feet hip-width apart and shoulders relaxed, just face forwards with your arms down by your sides and keep your back nice and straight. Now lift your right leg, bending your knee and raising it towards your chest. Hold that position briefly and bring your foot down to the floor again. Now lift up your left leg, raise your knee towards your chest, hold briefly and bring it down again. Repeat this a few more times. It's a bit like marching on the spot, but slower and with both arms down by your sides. If you want to work a little harder, you can lift your legs higher just as far as is comfortable, and you can lean slightly towards your knees to put a bit of a pull in your lower back. Just alternate your legs, lifting up and back down. This is good for your legs, hips, and core muscles. Now it's time for Through the Mist. This one's like swimming, the breaststroke. So stretch both your arms out directly in front of you at shoulder height, and with your palms facing outwards a few inches apart. Then, keeping your feet facing forward, twist your upper body to the left. Now pull both arms back in line with your shoulders and bend your elbows, then push your arms out again, just as if you're doing a breaststroke or trying to part the mist. So again, facing to the left, arms straight out and palms facing out. Pull back your arms, bend your elbows, then start again. We'll do a few more on the left and then repeat the movement on your right side. Don't put too much stress on your knees. So both arms stretched out in front of you, feet facing forwards. Twist to the side, then pull those arms back. You can lean more into it if you like, and you can pull your arms further back against your shoulder blades. A couple more now. Great work. This is really good for the chest, shoulders, arms, and core. The next one is called Charge Fists. This is a martial arts type of movement that works your chest and core, arms and shoulders. So whether you're standing or sitting, make two fists and bend both arms at the elbow as if you're getting ready for a fight, bringing your fist up towards your shoulders. Then just push your right arm forward, keeping it nice and straight at shoulder level. Pull it back towards your body and then punch forward with your left arm. So carry on with this. You're just punching forward with one arm at a time, alternating your arms each time. You can lean into it and put a bit of power and aggression into that punching arm if you like, or punch a little higher. Now it's time for high toes. So, facing forwards, with your feet a comfortable distance apart, just raise both heels off the ground, going up into the balls of your feet and raising both arms at the same time, bending them down at the elbow as you raise them up. Then bring your heels and arms back down again at the same time. And do this again, keeping it nice and slower. The slower the better. This is good for your balance and your core, and you should feel it pulling your calves. Just keep going slowly up and down into the balls of your feet, and a bit higher into your toes if you can. If you're seated, you can lean slightly forwards in your chair and feel it going through your legs. The next one is forest to sky. So lean forward slightly, and if you're standing, bend your knees a little way. Now, with a nice sweeping movement, lower your right arm down towards your left leg. Then sweep your arm slowly back up to the right as you straighten up, stretching your arm above your head. Then bring it back down to your side and swap to the other arm. So lean forwards, bend your knees, and this time lower your left arm down towards your right leg and sweep it back up again to the left. So keep going with this, alternating your arms, lowering one arm at a time down towards the opposite leg and stretching it back up high and then back down by your side. This is good for your back, shoulders, arms, and core. Now it's connect with the earth. Starting from the usual position, with your feet hip-width apart and arms down by your sides. Bend both wrists upwards so your fingers point forwards and your palms face down. Then, bending your knees at the same time, push your arms down towards the floor. Then straighten up and pull your arms back with the palms still facing down and elbows bent, tucking them in close to the sides of your body. Repeat this a few more times. If you're seated, press down to your feet and also focus on the arm movements, pushing down and pulling up. Keep going, just a couple more times. Well done. Now it's time for weighing the grain. Raise both arms and stretch them out to each side, keeping them at shoulder level, palms facing down. Then tilt so that one arm goes up as the other comes down, a bit like an aeroplane. Then come back to the centre and tilt to the other side, just as if you're weighing the grain on each arm. Alternate from left to right for a few more times. This one's great for your arms, hips, legs and chest, as well as your shoulders. To make it more challenging, try to make one arm go lower and the other go higher. Great. The next one is called the border and beyond. From the usual starting position, step your right foot forward with the knee slightly bent into a lunge position with your training leg naturally raised on its toes. Take care that your bent knee isn't further forward than your toes. Then stretch your arms out together in front of you with your palms facing forward in a pushing motion, as if you're blocking or pushing someone away. Keep your arms straight and at shoulder height, and then step back, bringing your arms back at the same time. Then switch to the left leg, stepping forward into a lunge and pushing your arms out in front, nice and slowly. Keep going with this, alternating your legs between right and left. You can do a longer or deeper lunge if you're able to, with nice high arms. These movements work your back, arms, shoulders, legs, and core muscles. And the last exercise is kick across. If you're standing for this one, you can hold on to something sturdy, like a chair or a kitchen work surface to help you balance. So with a straight back, raise your right leg a few inches off the floor, keeping it as straight as you can, and just kick that leg across the front of the other. Bring your foot back to the floor and switch to the left leg, just kicking across and alternating your legs. Keep going with this for a few more times. Only move within your capabilities and make smaller movements if you need to. If you're comfortable and want to work a bit harder, you can kick a bit higher. As well as helping your balance, this is great for your legs and buttocks. So that's it for the exercises. Well done! We're just going to finish with a quick shake to cool down. So raise both arms up above your head towards the ceiling and just briefly wave your hands and arms in the air. Then lift one leg slightly from the floor if you can. Shake it out in the air for a second or two. Raise the other leg and shake that one out too. Or you can just shake your upper body instead. So that's the end of the session. Great work, everyone. We hope you enjoyed it. Doing 10 today, just 3 times a week, can have positive benefits for your physical health and improve your well-being too. It's short, it's fun, and you'll simply feel better, so do keep going. You can also watch videos of all the sessions at 10today.co.uk.
TNS Soundings.
A very amusing item now. Colin from TNF Soundings has dramatised part of actor Michael Simpkin's memoir, What's My Motivation? He's attending an audition for Chicken Tonight.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, I'm Colin. Actor and writer Michael Simpkins's What's My Motivation is a story of growing up in an obsessive pursuit of acting fame. Michael has kindly agreed to let me dramatise the following extract from his very funny memoirs for TNF Soundings. I'm grateful to my friends Matty Forrester and Barry Brown for their contribution to what follows.
The thing about adverts is that you only need to get one to make the equivalent of a year's money in a couple of days. Because of this, advert interviews are notoriously brutal affairs, involving loss of dignity, collapse of self-respect, with a healthy dose of humiliation heaped on for good measure. But think of the repeat fees. I try to remember this during my first audition for Chicken Tonight. The interview is in an attic room at the top floor of a shabby building off Carnaby Street. I walk up the narrow staircase and find myself in a tiny waiting area full of blokes all my age and each dressed as a friendly dad. A tired-looking receptionist is swivelling back and forth on an office chair.
Name?
Michael Simpkins.
Here for?
Chicken Tonight. I whisper it just in case I've come to the wrong place and these are auditions for the Royal Shakespeare Company.
You're 11:20. Forms to fill in over there. They're running late.
She waves airily at a sheaf of photocopied papers and a holder full of biros. I find a seat in the corner and start to fill in the paperwork. There's a brief outline of the advert, including a storyboard, a series of tiny boxed-in drawings depicting the different shots to be filmed. Most of them seem to feature a large rooster careering around a kitchen. A moment later, the door opens and a dad walks out, red-faced and panting. He retrieves his briefcase and bustles out without speaking. He's followed by Sylvie, the casting director, whose job it is to compile the assortment of actors for interview. Most actors have the wrong idea about casting directors. We mistakenly believe that by currying favour with them, we're likely to improve our chances of getting through the door. I'm here to tell you it's a waste of time. Any project is so hopelessly oversubscribed, there's never a shortage of interview fodder.
This is Michael Simpkins, everyone.
The room is bare, apart from a teenager perched behind a video camera on a tripod and some shadowy figures at the far end.
Michael, these are the representatives from Chicken Tonight.
I give them a breezy grin. Nothing. All three clients are looking at the floor. They've learned the hard way that if they actually make eye contact with actors, we'll assume we've got the job.
Stand here, please, Michael. Oh, that's lovely. Sorry the director can't be here. He's on Marmite all this week, but it's quite straightforward. We'll have lots of fun. Have you seen any of our adverts?
I nod enthusiastically.
Good. So you'll know it's a bit off the wall. You don't mind making a bit of a fool of yourself, do you?
I think of the repeat fees. 3-day shoot, £250 per day, plus guaranteed £7,000 repeat fees. Extra if my image is used on billboard and poster campaigns.
Marvellous. So, it's tea time. You're sitting here at this table waiting for your wife to put your tea down in front of you. And you're pretty bored. You're expecting meat pie or beads on toast or something. And then she gives you this.
She indicates a paper plate lying on a table beside me with a plastic knife and fork next to it.
Imagine, this is a big, piping hot dish of delicious chicken wings covered in hot and spicy chicken tonight. So, you take a forkful. Or you're pretty suspicious. It's not what you were expecting and you're not sure you're going to like it. And then you put it in your mouth and... pow!
She throws an expression suggestive of lunatic delight. Behind her, the executives are looking on in quiet distaste.
Now, the fun bit. I want you to do whatever comes into your head, so long as it looks like a cockerel. This meal is the most fantastic thing you've ever tasted, and you want to be a great big chicken yourself. You flap your wings and scratch the floor, whatever you like. Just try to make us laugh. All right?
Make them laugh? those people on the sofa? I'd have more chance with the judging panel at the Nuremberg trials.
Oh, please, sing the theme song if that helps.
Just think of the repeat fees. I decide to give it everything I've got. I phoned my agent that evening.
Congratulations. They absolutely love you. Looks like you've taken to it like a duck to water.
You mean I've got it? An image of me on a beach in Hawaii is already calling me.
Not quite, but you've got a pencil.
Sorry?
Chicken Tonight have given you a pencil.
What's that?
Well, it means they want you to leave the shoot dates free and under no circumstances accept any other work without informing them first.
So I've got the job?
Not exactly.
I haven't got the job?
Oh, certainly not. No, no, no. You're on a pencil. This means you're one of a few. In my experience, it usually means that they're waiting for the managing director to have a look at the video and select his final preference. It should happen with a couple of days.
How many's a few?
Well, they told me it's a heavy pencil. Good sign. That probably means you're down to the last three or four. So, great news. Well done.
In effect, this means I'm now one of five or six roosters in various parts of London who now have their careers and bank balances in temporary suspended animation until the boss gets back from his golf break in South Africa. 3 weeks later, my agent calls me.
I've made some inquiries, and it looks as if the pencil is going in another direction.
Which means what?
It means they shot the ad last Friday.
TNS Soundings.
And that's it for this edition of Red Saturn. Many thanks to Angela and John for the radio listings, to Otley and District Talking Newspaper for the audio described TV listings, to Hilary Greterix and Chris Paramore, to Rupert Evershed, and to all at TNF Soundings. And a special thanks to our newsreaders, Caroline, Lucy, Sarah, and Caroline. And of course to Rob and Steve for their co-production duties. Goodbye.